Welcome to SpEducation, the special education podcast by SpEducators and for SpEducators, where we discuss all things related to special education, or as I like to say, SpEducation, from the point of view of professionals working in the field. I'm Sarah Perkins, a nationally certified school psychologist currently practicing in a junior high in Cheyenne, Wyoming.
I'm Leanne McElwain. I'm a special ed teacher at an elementary school and have a background in secondary schools as well.
In this episode, we're going to talk about how we and others could plan and organize to get started for the school year, given that it's August and school's coming. It's only a few weeks away for us, like two or three. Here in Cheyenne, there's a thing called Frontier Days, which is the last week of July. It's the daddy of them all, the biggest rodeo in the world. And after that, it always feels like a fast slide into the school year.
For sure.
So we're trying to get ready. So we've been talking about, Leanne and I have been talking about the balance between getting ready and not cutting your summer short. And how to make sure that you're feeling positive and prepared and also not working for free. So I don't know, Leanne, how have you sort of struck that balance for yourself?
It's a constant battle, I would say. There's some things that I think each individual has to decide if it's worthwhile or not to them. One thing coming to mind is like any training that you need to do online before school coming, you know, you might decide that it is worthwhile to you to get that out of the way when you have time to do that. But
I do that too.
I think it's a balance. Yeah.
The trainings is one I always do, like the yearly online bloodborne pathogens and those. Yep, that's one. I agree.
There's been a lot of memes lately that have gone around of people clicking through, you know, but it's some of it is it just gives you a time to focus on it when you aren't bombarded with a bunch of things to take care of.
Yeah, absolutely. And wondered if our districts may be feeling a bit defensive about the number of trainings, because we did get that email from HR saying this is the like law requiring those trainings.
I know.
And so I was like, I don't think anybody's blaming you, but I get that you're feeling defensive.
Yeah.
I know that in the past, like my first year or two, I really would try to like get organized ahead of time. And then you and I have talked about realizing, especially if you work at schools with a transient population, that if you prepare in terms of students too much in June, even in early August, you might be surprised who walks in your door.
Right, exactly.
So I think unless you're certain that someone's going to come and the parents are requesting a meeting, I don't necessarily spend a lot of time thinking about individual students coming in.
Agreed.
In the summer.
In fact, at this point, for my school this year, which isn't always the case, but I don't even know which grades I'll have.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Well, and I know our teacher SpEducators in my building, they don't know any of that. They don't know what subjects. They don't know any of that yet. So yeah, if you put, I think actually that's a good like end of the year mental preparation is like, don't lean too hard on what you think next year is going to be like. You know, I had a staff member who was really upset at the end of the year because they were moving classrooms. It's like, I think you gotta own all of that real lightly when June rolls around.
Yeah, I agree.
And I also think, you know, this is one good way to prepare for the start of the school year is what do you need to do personally or for your family to feel like we're in a good place? Is there anything that we really wanted to do this summer that we haven't done yet? Are there any routines we need to talk about, you know, moving into the school year that might change? Because in school families, you know, structure of family life changes when you go back to work.
Absolutely. And so And at the same time, it is a balance because it's like just because school is starting doesn't mean the world ends as we know it. And so it's important, I think, to think about that. Like you mentioned, like owning it lightly, you know, just knowing that, yep, it's all relative. It's okay. We're, you know, reassure yourself that if you don't feel like you've conquered everything, it's okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And one thing we were talking about before we started recording is your kids are older, but in a family with kids who need watching, we always plan to have our son be with his grandparents when professional development starts. And if you have a possibility of doing something like that, I 10 out of 10 recommend it. It is always nice to have, to know I don't have to worry about him those first few days when everything's a little hectic and there's no place for him to be.
Right. That's such a good point. Planning that would be very helpful.
Especially because one of the lovely perks about being a school family is that you don't necessarily need daycare all summer. But those few days at the start of the school year, and in my house, my husband works on a school year schedule too, so he's also busy at the same time I'm busy. So it's not like he can take off. Mm-hmm. So I would say if you have kids that need, you know, supervision, that's something to consider is, you know, make it as the stress level as low for you and for your kids as possible by having some sort of positive plan for them.
That's a great idea.
The next thing on the list of things to get organized that we have down is material organization, which is such a thing for educators. I feel like most teachers have the most material out of all educators, partly because they have the most space and the most, I don't know, kids, or maybe the most time with kids.
Which type of teacher are you talking
I was thinking like research teachers as opposed to like speech paths a higher caseload maybe, but
sure. Yeah, I think that is probably correct because especially for, well, I mean, all grades, but in elementary, you can be covering so many different topics that you have supports or resources to go to, you know, to help build those skills. So you do have quite a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think that ideally when you're organizing materials, like physical materials, it's good to, if you have a sense, which you might not, of are you going to have multiple schools? Are you going to have a classroom of your own? You know, or are you going to be sort of in a cart or just have an office and start, you know, to think about what is the appropriate, what quantity can I manage without feeling overwhelmed?
Right. And that also helps to kind of wrap your mind around your budget too. Like it helps you to not overbuy when you may not even need those things.
Absolutely. And I would recommend is if you're new to the career, I would certainly buy with your own money before school starts little to nothing. Mm-hmm. Only things that you need to organize your own personal self, like a planner if you if you like planners. And only buy a planner if you like planners. If you've never used a planner, don't start
right
now.
Right.
Because one, the building might have money that you're not aware of. And two, you don't know what you need until you need it. And now you are carting around unnecessary materials.
Exactly. And I think it's part of managing expectations, but then also managing your own level of anxiety, because there is a tendency to look at like gen ed teachers and education in general, and everybody's getting ready for things. But if you don't know what you're getting ready for, that is not time well spent. Mm-hmm. Even if it helps you to feel like you're doing what everybody else is doing, it actually, I don't know. Again, I guess if that helps your anxiety level decrease, then great, go for it. But if it's planning, you're going to have to go back and redo, you know, what's the purpose?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I think just kind of fighting, like waiting.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't do things or gather materials just because that's what's happening around you or because you have downtime.
It probably would be like you're talking about your own planner, you know, or even a planner, like you mentioned, for your family so that you all know what you're doing, you know, as you start. But
yeah, I think part of that too is really like knowing what works for you, which depending on where you are in your career, you may have a good sense of or not such a good sense of. But I think it's important to not be dishonest with yourself, I guess, and to think, oh, I'm definitely going to be the type of person who uses an app to track everything I do. If that's not who you are, that's okay. And I know, like, when I worked with you, you always had a binder that you used to organize yourself. And I was like, why do you have such a giant binder? And you're like, where's your stuff, Perkins?
Exactly.
And it worked. But I think the reason it worked between us is because we both understood where, how we worked and how the other person worked. So I was like, is it printable? And I'd be like, oh, Leanne, why does it need to be printable? And you'd be like, I'll email it to you, Sarah. And I'd be like, thanks. But what has not worked for me is when I've worked with colleagues who go, oh, I love like online spreadsheets. And then I make them for them. And then they go, you never told me that. And I'm like, but I spent time to make you this thing mm-hmm. that you're not using. Mm-hmm. And so I think, which is, it's fine if they don't use it, but then just tell me, that's not how I roll. I'm going to need you to print it.
Right. And that does speak volumes. Like, that goes into knowing your team. You can't really know your team until you start working together, you know, and so just give yourself time to get started and then put your energy into those things so that you're not redoing. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, part of organizing too is when it comes to, like, for educators, scheduling is a thing that it's not for general educators. And I think sometimes general educators don't really understand the amount of weight that the calendar carries in SPED, because for general educators, one of the lovely things about teaching is it's highly structured sort of for you. Mm-hmm. You might have to structure your daily schedule, but once you do that once and then you use it, and often your daily schedule is handed to you. Like, these are the classes you're teaching, reading must be before lunch, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But for SPED, in it, one, you have to figure out how to schedule your groups and your student services, but then there's also scheduling IEP meetings. When are you going to write those IEPs? When are you going to test? So I think scheduling is lost when SPED educators talk to general educators. They don't really get the weight. So I would say, if it were me, I wouldn't, again, not start too early, but probably right around the start of school, maybe a little after the start of school, start, what's your caseload? When are the IEPs? At least know the first two. Mm-hmm. Especially if you're new and you know that's going to be hard, I'm going to be nervous about it. Mm-hmm. You know, figure out right away, when is the first one due and who do I need to have my back?
Right. And when you're looking at those IEPs, you know, you're looking for service times as well. So it's like you can track the IEP dates and then look at their service areas, service times, and then...
And that helps you build your daily schedule.
Exactly. And then... Because then you can know what classes they're in, what teachers to talk to, what teachers to get copies to.
Yeah.
You know, so. Yeah.
Absolutely.
It all flows from there.
Some other dates that I think sometimes we're not told, but would be great if you could know. And you can ask your principals or other SPED educators, if you have a department head. You could ask about mandated testing. You were mentioning that at your school, the mandated testing for, like, oh my gosh, I'm blanking, YTOP was announced, and that was really helpful to know what those windows were and mm-hmm. when Gen Ed was going to be busy ahead of time.
Yes, absolutely. And there's actually a district calendar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. But that's not necessarily something that's explicitly talked about at the school level. So if you don't think to go look for it or to ask, you might not know, but it might help your anxiety level, your planning, to know that.
I agree.
The other thing to remember is progress monitoring, and that is in our district, and I'm assuming everywhere because that's sort of how the law is written, it's due at or near end of quarter when grades are due, but you can get those exact dates and, you know, do I need it right when grades are due? Is it a week after, a week before? And then you can start planning, is there time I need to dedicate to progress monitoring? Ideally, your progress monitoring is part of your teaching, but that's, we know that that can't always happen.
Mm-hmm. I work with a teacher who has specific times, specific days that she progress monitors. And that was new to me this year, and I thought, boy, that makes sense. So that was helpful. Like, so she, that routinely, and it does compare or correspond to the general education teachers, so it's nice to have agreement or congruency with their schedules for regular progress monitoring.
That is nice. Mm-hmm. That reminds me, I read a book a year or two ago called The Four Tendencies by Gretchen Rubin, and it's about habit building, and there's a lot of books about habit building, like Atomic Habits is a big one. It's sort of in that vein, but she talks about, like, four different ways of relating, and now, of course, I'm not going to remember what the four ways are.
I have them right here.
Oh!
Upholders. Mm-hmm. Questioners, obligers, and rebels.
Yes, thank you. And so those four different approaches require different scaffolding to help them be successful. So, like, upholders are, like, if you commit to, if there's a rule, you follow the rule, right? And whereas obligers are like, I don't really care about rules, but if I tell Leanne I'm going to do it, then I'm going to do it. So I need a buddy. Mm-hmm. Whereas rebels are like, don't tell me what to do. Mm-hmm. And so they need the sort of their, to be given their own way to do it, and rules they're going to push back on. Mm-hmm. And then what was the last one?
And then questioners.
Questioners. Oh yeah. They need to know the reason mm-hmm. behind it. Mm-hmm. And so I think, one, knowing how you operate, and two, maybe any colleagues that you work closely with can be helpful. I mean, even if you don't necessarily have them fill that out, but knowing, you know, I do really well if I set a deadline, mm-hmm. or I don't really like deadlines, so I just like to know when things are in broad strokes and I get to it when I get to it. Mm-hmm. You know, again, that like being honest with yourself about who you are.
Right. And not trying to just please your team, mm-hmm. but really being able to know your strengths and tendencies, like that said.
Yeah. Like one thing I found that helps me is when I have maybe a false deadline. Like in the past, we've done pre-meetings prior to evaluation meetings, which people have rightly pointed out kind of have problematic tendencies if pre-meetings aren't done with care. But one advantage is if I know I'm meeting, then I'm going to have my stuff done. Mm-hmm. And then we can talk about, do I need to do more stuff? Mm-hmm. Whereas if I wait till the parent meeting, I can always do more stuff after the parent meeting, but it's a little more awkward. Mm-hmm. So I know that that helps me. Mm-hmm. And in my experience, it helps a lot of the other team because it's both like an upholder thing and an obliger thing to have a meeting.
It's true. I just saw something online where it was kind of a funny, kind of snarky cartoon thing that said, ask your school psychologist why reports are due a week ahead of the meeting. And some people were like, yeah, why do we have to do that? And of course, those are the rebels, right?
Yeah.
And there was another group that was like, oh no, it's actually the law. You need to have things ready given to parents. And so that all came together with your the book that was describing people's tendencies.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, and in our district, I don't know that we've been super successful, but there's been conversation, at least, about moving towards sending paperwork home ahead of time, which I do think is at least implied in the law and is certainly best practice, but is a hard shift for our SPED educators who are not used to that.
Yeah, so this year I went through that. At our school, it is considered best practice and desired or kind of required by the team. Like we kind of hold each other accountable for that because obviously everyone has to input their, you know, information into the IEP. And so then you have the draft and then you send it home, mark draft. And that was an expectation on our team this year. It did get tricky, especially during the busy times of year, because sometimes, you know, I was just sending it home the day before, but at least it was a day before,
yeah.
You know?
So, and even if the parents don't look at it, if you know that if it's an annual and all you've done is the present levels, you haven't even done the goals, but at least you know, I am clear where the student's mm-hmm. at and I am prepared to discuss what types of goals would be. I mm-hmm. think it's good, especially if you were new to the career, to have that level of preparation.
Right. And it really does help the team kind of be ready at those busy times when sometimes you're just lucky to be making it to the meeting.
Yes.
But if you've done at least if you have, like you said, that it's almost a false deadline or, you
yeah.
know, it just gets you ready a little bit before.
Well, and I would say if you are new to the career too, or if you're in a new building or a new district or a new state, that is definitely something worth finding out. Like it was just occurring to me when you said that I am not clear that the people who are new to us in my building mm-hmm. are aware that that's at least an aspiration, if not an expectation. Mm-hmm. And so I need to reassert because we had that expectation. We did not live up to that expectation. It sort of fell by the wayside. But this year I'd like to once again at least try. Mm-hmm. But they won't know that unless I tell them.
Right. And it's really hard at the secondary level because you have so many teachers
mm-hmm.
and then you have so many questioners or so many,
yes.
you know, rebels.
Well, and maybe I'm biased, but I would say in my experience, educators tend to sort of vibe a little bit like the students they educate. And in middle school, that means a lot of rebels and questioners.
Yes, I would agree. They value that.
Yes, that independence, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So then a topic near and dear to my heart, electronic organization, tracking your electronic files and your emails. And I swear everybody has a different approach to emails. So for me, I set an alarm every Monday to organize my email inbox, and I try to use it as a to-do list. And I only keep emails in my inbox that require action. And then I move the rest of them into other files. Like if this is just nice to know or delete. I don't know. How do you try work with your email.
I'm not good at
not like that.
Organizing it at all. I do typically delete things I don't need, you know, just right away. I also like to unsubscribe to things that I might be getting extra emails for. And they're so bad about giving you discounts for giving emails. So that just seems to be an ongoing thing. So unsubscribing to whatever I can unsubscribe to. And then anything that like my principal or, you know, someone similar, like a supervisory role has, I try to keep those, the ones that I'll see at the top. So, I mean, I guess I do have more organization than I feel like I do. It's just that the to-do list gets long.
It does.
As soon as school starts.
It does. And I often find that my using emails as to-do list can fall apart. And so I need to go back and revisit. And sometimes I go back and look and I go, turns out that's just not reasonable. It's not going to happen. Or I need to, you know, push that back. So yeah, that system doesn't always work for me. Mm-hmm. And I was using like an online to-do app, but that system wasn't working for me very well last year. So I started using paper. I think what I found is when my systems fall apart, that's sort of a good diagnostic moment for me to be like, probably I'm overwhelmed.
Right. That's a really good point. And at those times, you, in my observation of your work, you do a nice job of letting your principals know how you're feeling. And so it's important, I think, at those times to know that everybody goes through that.
Yes.
There will be times when it falls apart. Be gentle with yourself and then use your resources. Use
Absolutely.
Your principals, use your teammates, talk with them, and then, like, don't beat yourself up. Don't spend time beating yourself up because it's better just to rest and get back on track.
I think you're absolutely right. And I actually I definitely was telling my supervisors, both at the building and district level last year, when I felt like I could not be successful and why. Mm-hmm. And I told them, I said, if you feel the problem's me, I'm open to hearing that. But I believe the problem is not, that there's a larger problem here that's not allowing me to be successful. But I also spent time talking to my especially new to the career teammates, mm-hmm. because they, like, I have background to know I have done this job successfully in the past, and they did not. So they would say, I suck at this job. And I'd say, no one can do this job right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think having that conversation with somebody who is in the same boat and maybe has more background, if the only thing you get out of it is everybody's struggling, that can still be useful.
Mm-hmm.
And so definitely reach out to your principals or your colleagues and check in and say, is this actually really hard, or is there something I need to change?
Mm-hmm.
Because you might hear, no, actually, there's X, Y, and Z that have changed things for us.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not you.
Right. And related to that, self-care throughout the school year is important to keep up, you know,
mm-hmm.
in terms of, like, if you need to talk to sometimes spouses get tired of hearing the same thing over and over again. And so if you need, you know, a counselor, or if you need a coworker, someone that you can talk to, be sure to do that. And then massages or going out for walks or whatever you need to do, that's okay.
I think that's such a good point. And that's something I say to new school psychologists a lot, because pretty much by definition, role related service providers, school psychologists, speech paths, OTs, are usually the only person who does their job that they interact with on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you want to interact with somebody who does your job, you have to be intentional. It's not like teachers where you can just go in the hall and see another math teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always tell new to the career people, I say, in my opinion, part of your job is explicitly checking in with colleagues.
Yeah.
And if that means that you go out to lunch and you get dirty looks from teachers, like, do it anyway, because you need to have, they get a chance to talk to somebody that does their job every day, and you might once a month.
Mm-hmm.
And so I completely agree. And also related to that self-care and the email, what popped in my head as soon as you said that is, have boundaries around email.
Yes.
I find, like, my principal, she tends to email at like 5 a.m., but she's really clear that people should have boundaries, and she communicates that clearly. She's like, this works for me.
Mm-hmm.
I like to email at 5 a.m. I do not expect you to reply. And I make a point of, I never send emails. Very rarely do I send emails outside of work hours unless it's truly urgent.
Mm-hmm.
I'll schedule them to send at 7 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
because I don't want anybody to think that they're obligated to reply.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I want to be clear in my own head, is this something that truly needs mm-hmm. a reply at 8 p.m. and 99% of the time, it doesn't. Mm-hmm. I mean, perhaps if there's been a crisis at school, perhaps if there's a staff member who's sobbing, who has an 8 a.m. IEP meeting. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, usually it can wait till work hours.
Yes. And it is easy to start skewing that. Mm-hmm. It's easy to, just based on the pressure, be like, no, I need to send this now. But questioning and keeping that is good.
And I think really, like, don't start to get in that habit, because it's mm-hmm. harder to change that habit when people have gotten used to, I can just ask a quick question and I know she'll get back to me even though it's dinner time. Mm-hmm. That's harder to move back from mm-hmm. than sending the occasional one at dinner time if you need to. Mm-hmm. So I would say be really conservative about that. And emails all have the built-in, like, schedule send now. Mm-hmm. It ain't no thing. Mm-hmm. Just hit schedule send. Related to all of that, I wrote down that part of my organization moving into the school year is checking in with leadership and having some conversations starting the school year. Whenever, especially if I move schools or I get a new principal, I ideally try to meet with them even in May before the next school year and just introduce myself and maybe ask them, what have you seen in the department that you've liked? What have you seen from school psychs that you've liked? Mm-hmm. What haven't you liked? But if not in May, then in the fall, at least a quick check-in. Like, are we on the same page? Mm-hmm. I think sometimes people are afraid if you ask principals questions like that it comes off as, like, negative.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've had, over the last couple of years, a role change. And mm-hmm. so I went from being leadership in a department to just, not to say just, but a role as a teacher. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's something I miss, is having those conversations directly with the leadership. And when you think about it, it does make sense to a degree that they can't have individual time with every teacher. So they talk to teams, you know, and then you get the information that way. But it is something I miss. I miss the opportunity to talk through planning and reasoning as to why things are the way they are, or just evaluation as well. But mm-hmm.
And I would say that if you're feeling like maybe you're not quite getting what's happening, or you and your principal have different ideas of I would say schedule a meeting. Mm-hmm. I mean, I wouldn't go overboard. I agree. They can't meet with every teacher. Mm-hmm. But I'd say if it's once a quarter, even potentially if you're new mm-hmm. or if there's a lot of change happening in your department, once a month is not unreasonable.
Mm-hmm. No.
And I would schedule it, and I do schedule it. I mean, sometimes I'll, like, stop by and see if they're available, but principals are hard dogs to keep under the porch. Yeah. So I often schedule it and just say, hey, are we good? Am I doing what you want?
Yeah.
And I find that often just having that conversation mm-hmm. makes me feel better and makes them feel better. Even if the answer is it's fine, or actually, everything sucks, but it's not you. Or actually, I wish you would do this. Like, no matter what the answer is, mm-hmm. the conversation makes things more positive.
Right. I agree. It is important to respect what they've asked you to do and try to meet those. Like, if you are a rebel person, you know, it's important to kind of play by the rules. I was thinking, mm-hmm. as you were speaking, I was thinking about switching roles and going into a new building put me more as, like, a newbie in the building, even though I have quite a bit of experience. But I also wanted to show respect for the team and then also, like, their systems and what they have in place. Like, there's nothing worse than someone coming in and trying, you know, to implement all of their things. So I think it's important when you're asking for those meetings or discussions with your principal to reflect and see how much you've worked within their system as well.
I think that is a really good point. And often the system might not always be really explicit and clear. And so you do need to ask, if not the principal, whoever is establishing the system within your department. But it's worthwhile to, if you're not clear, then mm-hmm. you need to ask.
Right.
Because, you know, I love a rebellion, but you should know what you're rebelling against before you rebel.
I agree. And, you know, if you need something a little different, like, say your principal's coming across wanting your lesson plans, you know, once a week, wants them on their desk at a certain time. and you do it slightly differently, it's worth a conversation. But you can start off with, this is what I understand that you're wanting. Would it be possible? You know,
yeah.
And so I just think, yeah, just again, knowing yourself and then taking time to mm-hmm. discuss what they're wanting, check in with them. That does send a positive message, I think, that you're an active, engaged employee.
Absolutely.
Even if you're a rebel.
Even if you're a rebel. Another thing I always talk to principals about is I'll talk to them about, like, you know, what I've liked that I did last year or previous schools or whatever, and that I want to keep doing, and just sort of checking in, saying, this has been positive. Has it been, you know, have you felt that way? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, this is what I want to work on. Is that where you see me needing time? And I find that helpful, one, as for that obliger accountability, to have somebody else going, I thought we were really focused on behavior plans this year. And like, yeah, I did say that. But also, sometimes, you know, they'll help you.
Right.
They'll say, oh, actually, I heard of this great PD. And like, do you want to go to Florida and attend mm-hmm. this PD? And it's like, oh, okay,
right.
Sure. Or maybe no, but I'm interested in this. But often they're more than happy to help if you tell them your goals. You know, hey, I really do want to focus on this. Odds are they could see a need for that and are willing to maybe let you shift what you're doing a little bit to accommodate your interests.
I agree. That does remind me that I have somewhat forgotten over summer that I am seeking national board certification. And so that would be, you know, one of those areas that you're talking with mm-hmm. your leadership about. Hopefully they know, because it's a long process anyway. But if that's something you know, those goals are important to let your leadership know about.
Yeah.
They do want to support that, I think.
And I mean, principals are also nice people, but on a purely like, you know, optics side too, it helps them if you do that. Mm-hmm. And if you tell them, then they can celebrate that they have a teacher who's nationally certified. And so it can be a win-win for everyone.
Absolutely.
I also wrote down some questions that I like to ask. These are questions I either ask at interviews or when I'm meeting a new leadership. I ask them, what would be the difference between somebody who's, like, in my case, a good school psychologist versus a great school psychologist? Like, what are you really looking for to push it over the edge?
Mm-hmm.
I'll be totally honest. I might not be asking that this year because we are doing a lot of other things, and I'm not necessarily going for great. I'm going to be good at all the things I do and some of the new things. But I've had that conversation with my principal. Like, look, I can't be superlative if we're adding new things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they're okay with that. Or if I'm interviewing or new to a role, I'd say, like, how would you know in a year that I was the right person for this job?
Mm-hmm.
And often it's really interesting to hear their answers because they might not have, like, clear goals or visions mm-hmm. for their department. And I feel like that's worth knowing. Because if they don't, either maybe that could be frustrating to work there, and or maybe this is an opportunity for you to offer some ideas of clear goals.
Mm-hmm.
When I meet with teammates, like other speducators, I have similar conversations. I try to ask them, like, what have they found helpful from school psychs, or including myself, if I was with that teammate the year before, what has been missing, what would they like to see? And again, I ask them about their goals and how I can help them with that. Like last year, I had a brand new teacher who was really excited about behavior programming, which seemed like, from my point of view, sort of a reach for a brand new teacher, but I know she has background in working with difficult students. And so we set her up to work with the BCBA on developing some behavior plans, which I thought was above and beyond, but if that's what she wanted to do, then she should get a chance to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I think also, again, closer to school year, having conversations about individual students can be helpful,
mm-hmm.
but only if you know they're coming back. Because otherwise, you end up sharing these big stories and all your plans, and then they go elsewhere.
Right.
You were just talking about team social events. when it comes to, like, building team relationships, I don't know, do you find social events like voluntary barbecue, back-to-school barbecues helpful, or what's your relationship with those events?
I think it's come and gone over the years. I think I always have a thought about enjoying them and going and attending and having fun, but I really need to be aware and, like, in touch with my own energy levels at that time. Mm-hmm. And then it's not a bad idea to set like a time limit, like say, oh, I'll go for 30 minutes, or to have a friend that you plan on going with, you know, just to get it done. It is helpful to be a part of the group and not like an just kind of someone on the side that's a part of the team that doesn't participate. So I do find them helpful, but I just think it's important to be realistic too and not do it if it's not something that will actually fill your bucket per se, you know, in terms of being something that would give you back energy.
Absolutely. I think that's a good point. And I think sometimes there are opportunities for different types of social events. So like if going to a barbecue on a Friday night is not your thing, perhaps there might be a monthly luncheon potluck at the school and the lounge that feels more accessible because it's during the work day and, you know, it's only half an hour. And so you could say, I'm going to do one and not the other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or participate in Secret Santas, but not, you know, something mm-hmm. outside of the school day. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree that you shouldn't, even if you're new, feel obliged to commit to every single social event that happens in the building. You can still be a kind and friendly teammate and colleague and do the ones that feel good to you. Mm-hmm. I do think it's worthwhile to maybe commit to I'm going to do something that's not professional with my colleagues, I think is reasonable. Mm-hmm. And more than that is unnecessary. Mm-hmm. I do think, I wrote down about ensuring healthy boundaries with colleagues, I think that's important to make sure that you feel like you have resources and teammates you can communicate with, but also that if today's the day where I just need to write this IEP and I cannot talk to you about how your dog got sick, even though that's awful, I think making sure that you maybe have a plan. What am I going to do if this person comes in my office or my classroom during my planning when I really need to buckle down? Mm-hmm. You know, and how to communicate that. I totally admit that that's not something I'm always good at. Mm-hmm. And so it is important. Sometimes I will cover up the window to my office so that it's not clear if I'm in there or if I'm testing. Mm-hmm. Because I don't even want to have the conversation about whether I'm available for talking.
Right.
But I make a point to have it uncovered much of the time.
Right.
So just thinking, being thoughtful about what is a good way mm-hmm. to have that boundary and what is reasonable for you.
Right. That's really good self-care. And then one of the things that comes to mind in that area is having kind of a plan or structure to how you recognize other people. So like the paraprofessionals, mm-hmm. you know, that's one of the things that my new school does really well is they just have regular routines and I mean, they don't even really have to think about it. It's just like, oh, this is coming up. This is what we do. And then, you know, we might buy lunch for them or our principal will, you know, recognize us by doing something. But it's just, it's emphasized to continually do that throughout the year. That was a nice change. I think in some secondary buildings, it's a little harder.
I think so,
because
too.
You have so many.
One thing we did not as consistently as I'd like, but I think it was a good beginning last year in our school is we did, during our special education department mm-hmm. meetings, we would recognize both the teachers and the paras, mm-hmm. and we'd invite them to come and we'd maybe talk about this para did this thing that was super helpful this week, and let's all clap and give them a gift card. I think it would be lovely if we continue that this year and maybe make it more systematic. And it sort of ended up last year being that the person running the meeting nominated, which I think is fine, but it would be lovely if any SPED educator could sort of nominate somebody to be recognized.
Mm-hmm. So related to that, do different people run your meetings?
That's last year, one person ran it. I think that would be nice. Mm-hmm. I think we're planning on maybe changing it. And I think moving forward, it would be lovely if maybe different people who had expertise in different areas talked, or if they have problems with that they want to bring up and problem solve. Mm-hmm. But that was the downside of having the person who run it recognize people, is because it was just one person. Mm-hmm. So it was what that person happened to see.
Right.
It was still nice. And paras, I don't think, were formally getting recognized much before that. So that was nice. Mm-hmm. But I think we could do better. Mm-hmm. So we have down some systems from self-care, which we've talked a little bit about. But I think not only like self-care outside of school, like getting a massage or spending some time with your dog or whatever it is, but also self-care during the school day it's hard because it's the school day is so like frenetic, which I think is one of the things we like about it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's also, it's okay to be done, even if it's 1 and not 3:45.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So one thing I wrote is have a friend you can go to if you're overwhelmed or where will you cry?
Yeah.
Which maybe not everybody cries at work. But in my experience, everybody has a moment where they need a safe space.
Yes.
And I think one to acknowledge that that's, it's okay. And that this, unlike maybe other jobs, this is a job where there's legitimate heavy stuff that happens. Mm-hmm. Like you just had a conversation with a kid who got kicked out of their house because their mom is, you know, was being abusive or whatever it is. And it's genuinely hard to carry. And like, that's okay. Mm-hmm. And you're not weak and it's not bad.
Mm-hmm.
And you do, and you should have a plan.
Yeah. And it's good. I mean, I like that you have it included on the list because it can change year to year. If the staff changes in your building, you may, you know, or the schedule timing of your day changes. So it's good to think about that ahead of time.
And some of our, like in my building, some of my SPED educators, they share a room. And so often I think like as a gen ed teacher, you can use like your planning time in your room, you can shut the door. Mm-hmm. But that might not be the case for you, especially if you're itinerant or you share a room. Mm-hmm. So like, where can you feel safe? Mm-hmm. Years ago, my first year, actually, I had a really difficult conversation with the principal, and I walked out of her office, walked out of the school, went to my car, drove to another school, and walked into a colleague's office and started crying because that was my safe space.
Uh-huh.
And luckily, she was fine with that. But I think keeping an eye out for what, I mean, and maybe it's going and sitting in your car.
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe that's what feels good to you.
Right. And I know I've worked in some buildings that they even frown on. They really carefully monitor teachers and frown on you leaving the building as a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if not that, I mean, you know, just look for that safe space because it may be, you know, another teacher's classroom or, you know.
Or I mean, maybe you want to go in the bathroom and splash some water on your face. I mean, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is related to that is like take time off.
Mm-hmm.
Teachers are so bad at that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of pressure. I don't know if you felt it in your building, but we have a substitute shortage in our district. And it, so there was this, and our, my principal did a good job of not pressuring people,
mm-hmm.
but there was this sort of unspoken, if you take time off, you're creating more work for your colleagues.
Mm-hmm. And I know, and it's infuriating to me.
It's so infuriating. And even when, I mean, like, I do credit my principal. She made a point of saying, like, you have to take care of yourself. She had an announcement that would go off at the end of the school day saying, go home. You need time off.
Mm-hmm.
In a very kind of and friend and healthy way.
Yeah.
But I'd say, yes, do that. And if you need to schedule them out to hold yourself accountable, like, that's what I do. I put them on my calendar so that no one schedules a meeting and I just block it off. Nobody knows what it is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that way I know, you know, 2 months from today on a Tuesday
mm-hmm.
is the next time I could get a day off. But hey.
I agree. Yeah, that's very important.
Mm-hmm. I also wrote down snacks. And the lounge is dangerous, people.
mm-hmm.
So bringing your own healthy snacks can avoid binge eating donuts.
Yes.
It's probably good for everyone.
Right. Yeah.
You don't want that day old donut. You know you don't. Put something delicious in your office, if it's tea or if it's a snack. I didn't do this when we worked together, but I've started keeping teacher candy in my office. So I have kid candy, but then I have like the good stuff, like the Dove chocolates in a different bowl for the teachers.
Yeah. It is good to think about those things and how you can take care of yourself throughout the day.
Absolutely. I'd say the beginning of the year is also a good time to revisit, if you have established systems, to revisit those established systems. And maybe I'm just being a school psych dork, but I have a lot of templates for like reports and even sometimes for emails or any sort of recurring communication that I use. And this is a good time of year to check and be like, do I still like that? Was there something that was annoying me about the way I did that last year that I could revamp now?
Mm-hmm.
Do you use a lot of templates?
So I use many. I check out what's on Teachers Pay Teachers a lot, and I have varied it over the years. I do find it helpful to have, in one way or another, like a sheet or some kind of place where an IEP is just summarized. Mm-hmm. And I like to share those with other people, whether it be the paras or, you know, teachers, so that they can, just like an IEP at a glance,
mm-hmm.
They can see that information quickly. I've gone back and forth trying to use electronic planning systems, and I actually think I might go back to trying that again this year. The nice thing about it is if principals want to see your lesson plans, you know, electronically sharing it, it's just easier for everyone.
Yeah.
And there are some that you can also have in print. Like you could do both things, and it attaches to all calendars and all that. So, yeah, I think I just am always looking for something that works best, or and each year is different. So if you're working with different teachers, you'll be exposed to different things. You'll might need different things. So it's like you can pick up from other teachers what they use.
Yes.
So it's just about, I think flexibility is key, but also, you know, keeping your eyes open to see what might work better, but then sticking with something as well.
Yeah.
And my foundation is paper.
Mm-hmm.
And I like monthly calendars.
Yeah.
Like,
mm-hmm. So you can sort of see it further out.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. Yeah. And I think one of the sort of hallmarks that I've used when I think through like planning things forward is what can I get out of my head and use something else for?
Mm-hmm.
So Leanne and I have talked about this for years, but checklists are like the best thing ever. Actually, I'll add this book. There's a book called The Checklist Manifesto that I love. It was written by a World Health Organization doctor to improve health outcomes regardless of the technological level of a hospital, and it did. And so one of our colleagues, when I started talking about checklists, she'd always say, checklists save lives. And I was like, yes, they do. And so I'm a big believer in checklists. I create checklists for staff members, and then I use them myself. Mm-hmm. And then I catch myself making mistakes on the checklist that I made, which is why I use the checklist. So yeah, in general, I try to offload systems. My husband always laughs at me because I have tons of recurring alarms on my phone, on my computer, just because that way I don't remember.
Mm-hmm.
And like, am I going to forget to water the plants every week? Maybe not, but it doesn't hurt to not have to know. I don't have to think about it. Something will tell me when to water the plants.
Mm-hmm.
I do have a couple of little technological tools that I've used. The one I've been using for years is called the Form Tool. And I'll provide links to everything we mentioned today. It was, I believe, originally designed for lawyers. And it's a way to write like reports or any sort of document, and it will autofill, like, for instance, pronouns or names, and you can get as fancy as you want to get. So you can say, you know, if I check this box, then do this, and then also do that, but not this. And so it can be pretty flexible, and it's a one-time cost of like $70.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very reasonable. It does have a learning curve. So if playing with technology is not your thing, that maybe is not the place to start. But if it is your thing, I've used it for years and really enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that has less barriers to entry is ChatGPT. And I've been playing with it in the past few days because I've been thinking about this podcast. And you can do things like I asked it. I said, what are three different ways to organize a school psychology report? And the pros and cons.
Mm-hmm.
And it wrote three different school psych reports, sample reports, and said the pros of this one are this and that. And I was like, I might steal parts of that. I would say, don't put sensitive data into it. But if you used a fake name and replaced it, I think you could use it as a decent place to start for writing a behavior plan or a report on testing or a lesson plan. Like, especially if you're new, you could say, you know, give me some samples of good lesson plans.
Mm-hmm.
And it could help you. I've also used it if I have to write an email that I maybe am not sure that I should write, or that I've written in a way that is moving things forward. I have written an email and put it into it and said, can you make sure this is friendly and professional and not at all passive aggressive?
That's good.
One of them, it added like a thank you at the end, and that was the only change it made. I thought that was funny. I was like, that fixed everything.
That's funny.
But it can be really useful. And it's, you know, it's not going away, artificial intelligence. So it's certainly worth playing with. It has a lot of interesting applications. As I'd say the big thing is definitely don't feed it any identifiable information. Mm-hmm. But otherwise.
Right.
Then the last thing I wrote down is building a habit of self-reflection, which I think I could grow at, but I try to check in on how I'm doing throughout the year. Do you have any good tools, ideas for that, Leanne?
I would like to be better at it as well. Yeah. I actually have a goal for that for myself going into the school year, so that's good. What I would like to do is like each day start at the beginning of the day, identify the things I'd like to have taken, you know, just like you were talking about, getting those things off my mind so that they're, you know, kind of saved one place. And then at the end of the day, checking in to see how I felt about how everything went. I do want to add, I think that you are continually self-reflective. So while you might want to improve, like, you know, being more scheduled with it, I just think you should give yourself credit for that, because you're constantly evaluating how you can do things better. And that's why you've grown and you have a nice tool chest of strategies and resources. So I think that's always a good goal, though, just to be reflective. And
thank you for saying that. And yes, I completely agree. I think it's really worthwhile. When I started, our principal that we had at the first school we worked at together, he told me that being self-reflective was shown to be helpful in becoming a better teacher and was really important. And I think one thing that has helped me, which, like I said, I want to grow, but I do think there's some external supports that have really helped me move forward in that. And I think one is, like I said before, making sure to communicate with colleagues and being intentional about that. Mm-hmm. So one of the reasons I joined the Wyoming School Psychology Association was because I wanted to make sure that I was checking in on my profession and my role in it and with colleagues. And I think that has helped on that side. And things like getting together with you and doing this podcast, or just getting together with a friend and talking through, this has been hard, how have we done on that? Mm-hmm. I think those things, like having those external supports and sources of accountability help. So if you want to be more reflective in your practice, I think it's good to have something outside of you to move that forward, because we all know, like, come February, you're in the weeds. Ugh. And if you don't have anything outside of you to say, how's it going?
Right.
It's easy to never look up from the weeds. Also, like, teaching the class for the University of Wyoming. So I think, like, how can you, especially as you move, like, towards mid-career, like, how can you keep it fresh is a good way to stay self-reflective, or maybe, like, working with new-to-the-career people. You know, things like that I've found to be helpful. And like you mentioned, setting a goal. So something simple like, this is my goal for the year. And especially if you were to write it down and like put it somewhere where you might see it.
Right.
Then even if it's just like 30 seconds at the beginning of the day, being like, oh yeah, I really was going to make sure to, you know, progress monitor weekly and not just quarterly.
Exactly.
And, you know, and oh, I only progress monitor twice a month, but hey, you know.
Exactly. Just kind of seeing how you're meeting those goals. And I should say, their accountability can come in all shapes and sizes. So that reflection goal, I actually discussed with my nutritionist, which to me doesn't necessarily feel like a nutritionist type of thing, but it actually does help you stay on track in multiple areas. So I think it's good to just look for options and be open
absolutely.
To what resources, you know, you may have. Ask other colleagues what they do.
Well, and I think that made me think that also, like, having things that you're doing that aren't work, especially I think educators tend to, you know, it's not a career, it's a calling, and they tend to be sort of all in. And you know, when you're new, it can feel overwhelming. But I think, like, talking to somebody outside, like a nutritionist, is also, like, in and of itself, that's good for reflecting and for self-care, mm-hmm. you know, to have something that's not education.
Absolutely. And I mean, she and I specifically talked about what's the beginning of school year going to look like for you and, you know, what are your goals? Because it's easy to have it shift and yeah. then only want to please
yeah.
your parent, the parents you work with, the kids you work with, and your principal. Well, that's not reasonable.
Yeah. So, well, and especially when it comes to health, I've been thinking about that because in the summer, you know, we've been hiking once a week during the weekday because there's nobody hiking. And I've been doing CrossFit with my husband, and all of that's going to change come the school year. The CrossFit day is the same day I teach my class, so I definitely have to, at a minimum, move that. Obviously, I can't hike during. So I've been thinking about, I like the level of activity I've had in the summer. I know I can't have the exact same level of activity, but what could I do to maintain the health outcomes that I've been enjoying this summer in terms of
connection with your family?
Yes, and connection with my family. And so, like, it's going to be different. But what could I do to take some of that summer energy into the school year?
Right. So for me, one of the difficult things about education in general is just how extreme it is. You have yes. all this time off in the summer, and there's a pressure to do it all in the summer.
Yes.
And then devote your entire life to school during the school year. And it's just not reasonable, you know. So it's finding those ways that, like you're saying, you can carry forward the things that you've loved.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And then, and still be excited, you know, to see your kids and your colleagues.
Yeah, absolutely.
I did put a couple other resources I wanted to mention. So the Thriving School Psychologist Collective, it's school psych-centric, but that's my world. She does a lot around organizing. She had a free seminar last year, and I think it's still there, about using AI as a school psychologist. She also has, like, how to organize so that you aren't working from home, things like that. So definitely school psych-centric, but could be useful for other resources too. And then I looked up Misbehavior blog, and she talks about, like, resources for, like, behavior teachers. So that is more universal. There's another book, I'm not finished reading it, so I don't know that it's great, but it's called The Organized Mind, and I've started reading it. It's sort of science-y heavy, but it's about, like, how paying attention and staying on track, things like that work. So not necessarily a wholehearted recommendation because I haven't finished it yet, but maybe something to start with if you're interested. And then, of course, I'll include the other things we've referenced earlier on in the podcast. But I think that's plenty to get started for the school year. Okay, so happy first day of school.
Education.